Richard Shepard is in the studio. He has directed a new movie that I got a chance to see a special screening of a couple of days ago. It has been chosen to kick off the St. Louis Film Festival tonight at 7 o'clock at the Tivoli. It's called The Matador, and it stars Pierce Brosnan as a hitman and Greg Kinnear as a businessman, and the two of them meet in a bar in Mexico City, and
wackiness ensues.
I was about to use that cliche myself. That's exactly it. Yeah. Do you mind wackiness being applied to your movie?
Well, if I say it, it's okay.
Okay, good. I'm glad I didn't then. Pierce Brosnan got involved in this movie how?
By the grace of God, because I was really thinking that I was never going to get a major star to be in this film. I mean, Pierce plays sort of a degenerate scoundrel, mm-hmm. and I thought no sane actor would ever really want to do it. So I was going to make this movie for no money as a digital movie. And Pierce's production company got hold of this script because I was looking for a job, and they had an open assignment to write Thomas Crown Affair 2. So my agent sent it to him trying to get me some writing work because I was broke. And I met with them, and they were like, you know, we really like this script. Can we give it to Pierce? And I literally, like, laughed in their face and said, sure, yeah, you'll give it to him. He's never going to read it. And if he reads it, he's never going to want to do it.
Uh-huh.
And I went back to New York where I lived and live. And 2 weeks later, the phone rang. And there was Pearson. He said, I've read your script, and I would like to star in it, and I would like to produce it.
Wow.
Which is a pretty good phone call.
Let's see. I don't really have any job right now, and I'm just desperately trying to get a job as a writer, and you want to be in my movie, and you're a major movie star, too. Now, was there any part of you that said, no, I don't want James Bond in my movie?
Well, when you see The Matador, you kind of see how absolutely perfect it is that he was once James Bond,
yeah.
because the part he plays in The Matador is sort of, I mean, it's weird when he's in it, because it almost feels like it's a commentary on stuff he's done before.
It's the anti-Bond.
Right. It's James Bond on his very, very worst day. You know, this is a man, you know, the character he plays in the movie is a hitman who realizes on his 50th birthday that he has no friends at all, that the only people in his phone book are hookers and lockpickers. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's sort of funny to see Pierce, who usually plays this suave bola sort of guy, playing someone who's sort of really a mess.
Yep.
And so when I met with Pierce, I said, listen, you know, this script is pretty out there, and you're going to have to say some things that are things you normally don't say in movies. You're going to be mean to kids and all sorts of stuff. And I think it's funny, but I don't want to find out that, like, 3 months down the line, you want to change all of this. And he said, no, this is why I want to do it. I want to take a risk. And
he was tossing aside the Bond persona at the time, even though he hadn't been officially fired by the Broccolis. He kind of wanted to move on to other things.
I think he's just an actor who saw this as a challenge. It's different than anything he ever did. It shows a versatility. I mean, he's actually kind of vulnerable and funny in this movie, not how we always see him.
It's a great performance, I got to tell you.
You
got stuff out of him. You know, he was great as Bond, and he was good in the first Thomas Crown Affair
yeah.
remake. He and Rene Russo had a wonderful chemistry there, and with Dennis Leary and all the other people who were in that. But he was still playing, hi, I'm the suave guy
exactly.
who looks great in a tuxedo. In fact, nobody's looked better in a tuxedo besides maybe Robert Wagner than Pierce Brosnan.
Well, you know, actually, to tell you the truth, Paul, he has in his James Bond contract, he's not allowed to wear a tuxedo in anything other than James Bond. So in Thomas Crown, when he's in a tuxedo, his tie is undone. Little
really?
Trivia tidbit for those who care.
Well, in The Matador, he doesn't come close to wearing a
exactly.
tuxedo. As a matter of fact, we see more of Pierce in one scene than most people may have wanted to have seen. Well, no, I'm sure that there are women who love this scene in the movie where he walks through the lobby of a hotel
in his underwear
underwear and boots.
That's right. It was not in the script, and we were staying in this hotel and shooting in it. And I looked at this lobby and I thought, this is a great lobby. We should shoot something. And I said, hey, Pierce, do you want to walk through the lobby in your underwear? And he looked at me and said, well, can I wear my boots? And I said, okay.
Wait, that was really the first thing he said?
That's exactly what he said.
Let me think. Underwear. I'm not going to do it without my boots.
And when you see the movie, actually, there's about five extras, and it was a one-take wonder, and the people in the deep background are all hotel guests checking in, for real.
Really?
Yes. We did a rehearsal with him fully clothed, and then we did one shot, and there he goes.
And so the reaction you're getting from people...
In the deep background, their jaws are dropped, and they're
stunned.
Like, this is the best hotel in Mexico.
Like, you were lucky you didn't have any of them saying in a way that you could see on screen.
Exactly.
Look, it's Pierce Brosnan. He's wearing nothing but underwear. Well, at least he has boots on.
Yeah, he has the boots. He has the boots. Yeah. But Pierce really kind of let it all hang out in more ways than one. I mean, he went for it. It's a very... you know, funny, odd role for him. And I think that's so far at the festivals we've been going to, and the response has been like, wow, we like seeing Pierce do something different, and he's funny. And so I'm happy he took the risk with me as a director and a writer, and I'm happy that people seem to like it.
Well, I think it's going to get you out of movie jail, which
I hope it does.
You wrote a piece for a book, for a magazine called Filmmaker, which somebody at the film festival forwarded to me, and I read it, and you write about how you worked on a movie years ago when you were in your mid-20s called The Linguini Incident, which I'd never heard of, and frankly, I don't think anybody outside of your family ever heard of.
And you're being kind.
Well, I don't know anything about the movie other than what I read, and after that, before that, you were supposed to be this new wunderkind. Everybody was going to know the name Richard Shepard. You were going to be the new Spielberg, and then not so much, huh?
Not so much. I made this movie when I was 24, which was a romantic comedy that turned out to be neither romantic nor particularly funny.
Yeah, that's not good.
Not good. Not recommended by the board of whatever. David Bowie and Rosanna Arquette were in it, and at the time, Rosanna was a big star, and obviously David Bowie, and people really liked the script, and it had a lot of sort of Hollywood buzz about it, but no one had seen anything, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing as a director. I think I really botched it, and we finished the movie, and before I realized we botched it, we had a screening for the town, basically, and literally overnight, I went from having every agent and studio person taking me out to lunch to my phone not ringing, not even a wrong number, not... I would have liked someone trying to sell me something calling. I can't even tell you how it slapped me in the face and taught me a major lesson. And it was really hard because Hollywood will take a risk on a first-timer because there's always a hope that they're brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this is our next Tarantino.
Right. But a second-timer... Well, if the first one's not good, you know, there's plenty of other guys and gals on the line who might be great. You've mm-hmm. already proven you're not great. Mm-hmm. And it really sucker punched me. And it made me think about what I wanted to do, how I should go about doing it. It also made me realize what I had done wrong in that movie, which was, you know, not, you know, cut out the 10 minutes that were really, really, really bad and not listen to people's advice and all the stuff that could have made it better.
You believed the hype.
I believed it, swallowed it, put it in my back pocket, and sold it before any of it came, you know, worth anything. And, you know, when you're 25 and you've made a movie that's a real bomb, and most people haven't heard of it, and the ones who have don't like it, it's a really difficult place to be. And so I moved back to New York, and I sort of pulled up my bootstraps, and a few years later, I wrote a movie, and I made it for $50,000, and we cast Sam Rockwell in it before he was famous, and we ended up selling it to HBO, and it made some money, and I finally had a movie I was proud of, even though most people haven't heard of Mercy either, but that was that movie, and that led to this thriller I made for $1 million with Adrien Brody called Oxygen.
Before he won an Oscar.
That's right. I have a nice casting sense, actually.
Yeah, that's good.
And that movie was very well received at film festivals. No one's ever heard of it, but the people who have like it. And so when finally The Matador kind of came around, Pierce was able to say, well, what have you done? And I didn't have to say, well, I made this really bad movie when I was...
I was the director of The Linguini Incident. What have you done, Mr. Big Shot?
Yes, I think it would have been our last conversation. But I was able to say, hey, look at Oxygen. Look at what I've done. And he was able to see it and say, hey, you know, you're not completely incompetent. I think I'm going to risk my career and walk through a lobby in my underwear and boots for you.
Right.
But it sort of was a slow... So in a way, The Matador is serving as my first movie, even though now I've had this experience. And I think that it all kind of came into play when we were doing The Matador, which you know, I realized I wasn't going to get a third chance. This is my second chance, and I certainly wasn't intending to blow it this time.
You didn't blow it. This one's going to be a hit.
Thank you. I hope so.
It opens January 6th, but they're showing it at 7 o'clock tonight at the Tivoli as the leadoff movie for the St. Louis Film Festival. Richard Shepard, the director, here on the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. Now, when you take a movie like this to film festivals, Obviously, there are film festivals like the St. Louis Film Festival, but then there are film festivals like Sundance, where you take your movie and you're not only hoping to show it and people will enjoy it, but the people will actually pay money, buy it, and distribute it.
Exactly. I mean, we went to Sundance without a distributor. So Sundance was the first time we were publicly screening the movie for the public, for the press, and for distributors. So it was a trifecta of fear.
Did you have a Linguini incident flashback?
You know, this one I actually thought, I was old enough and we'd shown it enough that I kind of knew that it wasn't going to be a total mess. But you know that when it started, I stood in the back of the theater and I was like, if they're not laughing now, I'm going to get a stiff drink.
Mm-hmm.
And they laughed and they kept laughing. And it was an amazing experience because people go to Sundance and every year you hear of one or two or three movies that sell for money, for significant money at Sundance. And you don't hear about these movies that were supposed to sell but sort of disappeared.
Right.
There are a lot of those too. It's still a risk, you know. But we went in and we sold it to Harvey Weinstein from Miramax and now the Weinstein Company. And it was a bidding war situation. And the financiers did perfectly well. I'll never see a penny of it, but good for them. But it changed my career overnight because Sundance is a major, major film festival. And from there, we sold it to a major distributor who's now going to put it out. And we get to travel to all these other film festivals and start spreading the word. We've been to Toronto and we've been to Deauville, France and London. And now we've been recently to Chicago and Austin. And now we're in St. Louis. And, mm-hmm. and it's like, for me, that's why I want the movie to play these film festivals because I get to go and do these Q&As and actually talk to people who like my movie, which after Linguini incident, there was no one who liked my movie. So it's actually nice now that I actually talk to people who seem to like this one.
And Richard will be introducing it and doing a Q&A afterwards. And help me understand this because all of us who are not in the film side of show business always hear about box office. Oh, number one movie this weekend, number five. Oh, you know, and you hear about some movie that stars people who you think, well, that's a pretty big star, and it comes in at number four that weekend. How big a hit does The Matador have to be on its first opening weekend, the first weekend in January, for you to be able to, A, make another movie, or B, people to go, ooh, that guy can make a movie, and this is a successful movie?
Well, that's actually a really interesting question, and there's a lot of parts to that question, a lot of answers. I mean,
I got time.
you got nothing, but you got another hour on your show. I heard you. For me, the movie's already a success because the business of Hollywood has seen this movie at these film festivals, have read the early reviews.
So you're in.
I mean, I've already got my next movie lined up. It's amazing.
Okay.
Now.
And by the way, when you talked about the financing with the Weinsteins, you're not getting rich off this movie, but you're getting a career again.
That is 100% correct.
Okay.
I will never see a penny. But in terms of the movie making its money back, well, that's a major goal for us. You know, we want everyone who've put money in to make their money back. If it becomes a big hit, yeah, that would be fantastic, and I hope it does. But if they're spending $100 million on Batman, it better open at number one. You know, they have a lot at stake. They're spending $50 million to make $50 million or right. $75 million that first weekend. With a movie like The Matador, which cost about $10 million, we'd love to be opening in the top three or four. That would be fantastic, mm-hmm. you know. But it's not as crucial. What's crucial is that the word of mouth spreads, which is one of the reasons you do these film festivals, because it's a way for people to say on the internet or however people share information these days, hey, I saw this movie. It's not Batman. They're not going to spend $50 million advertising it. It's a little bit more interesting, hopefully a little more fun and this and that,
yeah.
and go check it out. So as a filmmaker, you know, I want people to see the movie, but for me, it's already done amazing things. Now, that said, if it makes 2 cents, that's not so great.
If it opens up the first weekend and doesn't have a second weekend, and the video company says, we're not even going to bother making a DVD.
Yeah, that's a prop. That's a bad thing.
But that's not going to happen.
Let's hope.
Like I said, I know you don't want it to be jinxed, but I think you got a hit on your hands. I don't know how big a hit, but I think enough of a hit that you're going to be able to go forward from here. Can you stick around for another second?
I'd love to.
I appreciate it. Richard Shepard is his name. You don't know him, but you will. He'll be the guy years from now. Oh, yeah, I remember he was on Paul's show. He was talking about his movie The Matador, the one with Pierce Brosnan wearing his underwear in the hotel lobby. Oh, yeah, I know this guy. Now he's got an Oscar. Cool. You should have seen the look on his face when I said that. On News Talk 1120 KMOX. In the studio this afternoon with Richard Shepard, who directed a movie called The Matador, which is the kickoff movie for the St. Louis Film Festival tonight at 7 at the Tivoli. You're invited to go. It's $10 to get in to see the movie, and Q&A session with Richard afterwards, and I really think you'll enjoy it. I think we described it at the beginning of this hour, but let me again try to give it. Well, you know what? You give it a 30-second summary of what the movie's about.
Well, it is about a burnt-out, lonely hitman who is about the least likely hitman you've ever seen in a movie. Because unlike usually where you see them perfectly killing everyone, this is a guy who's just a mess. He's reached the end of the line. And
midlife crisis.
A real midlife crisis. And he realizes because of what he does, which is kill people, he has no friends at all. And he decides he's going to make a friend come heck or high water. And he meets Greg Kinnear, who's a businessman who's down in Mexico trying to get a gig. And basically won't let him out of his sight. He has to become his friend. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I hope people find it. There's warmth as well. And
I laughed out loud.
God bless you. That $10 I paid you, Paul. Really?
No, seriously. Really. I'll tell you, my favorite line is, you know, what do we do? Go to Mary Ellen in Human Resources? That's a great line. And I can tell you that because you wrote the movie as well as directed it and did a nice job on both parts.
Thank you.
And it's got a real good look to it. And Brosnan has a very different look, as we've talked about before. Now, you've said in an interview that I read that you've got a love-hate relationship with hitman movies.
That's correct.
Why?
Because I think when we hear hitman movies now, I think it immediately says, you know, Steven Seagal, USA Network, sort of crappy hitman movie. And I part of me even like the fact that when we're talking about the movie saying hitman, well, we have to because that's what he is and what the movie's about. But to me, it's like, I don't want to see a hitman movie.
What does he call himself in the movie?
He calls himself a facilitator of fatalities.
There you go.
Which was my way of not having him say I'm a hitman.
Uh-huh.
But I do like the idea of a hitman movie. There have been some great ones, you know. And so to me, I was just trying to, hey, how can we tell a hitman story in a different way, which is sort of approach it from a character sort of thing and see the non-slick hitman. It's not Jean-Claude Van Damme with a gun killing someone in some fabulous location. Mm-hmm. It's Pierce with a gun, but he can't even hold it because he's a mess.
Mm-hmm. That one of the central scenes in the movie, because it takes place in Mexico City, at least the first part of the movie, before the great Act 3 that you wrote, one of the central scenes is a bullfight, thus the name The Matador, because there is the analogy between what he does and what the Matador does.
And Matador in Spanish means killer. The literal translation is killer.
And the swift kill is best in both his profession and in the Matador profession. Yeah. How hard is it to shoot a bullfight?
That is a good question, and I'll tell you, it was very important to us that, you know, there is a bullfight in the film, but it's not particularly bloody. We obviously don't show the worst parts of a bullfight.
You cut before the kill.
That's correct. And I think it still is very exciting and all of that, but we didn't want to stage a bullfight because we didn't want to be responsible for any animals dying on our watch. So we shot documentary at a real bullfight before we were even in production. And then when we went into production, we brought Pierce and Greg and a bunch of extras to an empty bull stadium. And it's a series of intricate intercutting and special effects and all sorts of stuff. And it was incredibly complicated. And we didn't have a lot of money on this movie, even with these big actors. It wasn't an expensive movie. And this was clearly the most expensive part of our film. How mm-hmm. do we make it feel like we're really at a bullfight when we're really not at a bullfight.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it works. And I think that sort of, you know, part of the reason I wanted to call it The Matador is because Matador means killer, which obviously Pierce is, but also bullfighting is a spectacle that is dying out. It's from another time, and it sort of should die out. It's really sort of a dying thing, as great and majestic as it is. And Pierce's character is sort of psychologically dying. I mean, he's not physically dying, but he's a mess, and he should sort of go out to pasture like the bullshit, So that's
preferably not with his ears cut off and thrown to the crowd.
Exactly.
Did you actually see that while you were there?
The stuff we filmed that didn't come into this movie would make the greatest underground DVD. You can't believe what we saw.
I've been to a bullfight in Mexico City 30 years ago. I was there and couldn't believe what I was seeing in person. And you probably saw even more.
Well, it was weird, but because we were there so many days that by the end, like the guy who works at the bull rink who has a giant scar on his chest from being gored by a bull knows me by name. I mean, mm-hmm. that's when I knew that we really spent our time there. But we did shoot a lot of stuff that obviously didn't end up in the movie. But, you know, we filmed bulls goring the matador. I mean, we filmed a lot of stuff that, you know.
I smell a DVD extra.
It is an extra, but it's a very, very R-rated extra.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of DVDs, how's the Linguini Incident DVD doing?
There isn't one. However, you know, someone should put it out on, it's on video if anyone feels like some masochism on a Friday, you know, not Friday night. Friday night you should see my movie. Saturday night for some masochism you can rent the Linguini Incident, but it's not on DVD yet, but I don't even know who owns it.
Well, I hope that the Matador has a nice long run in the theaters. I really enjoyed it, and I think it's going to be a hit, and I wish you the best of luck for it, and I'm urging people to go see it tonight, and if they can't see it tonight, then it really opens up on the first weekend of January, January 6, 2006. Is it good to open a movie in January, by the way?
It is, because you know, the Christmas season, there's these giant movies opening at Christmas that we could never compete with King Kong. I mean, you just can't.
Yeah.
And people are going to go see those movies in the first 2 weeks and hopefully love them and blah blah blah, but then come January, it's usually not when great movies are coming out. And I hope that this is a movie where people are like, hey, this movie has been getting some good reviews and some good buzz, and let's go out and see it, and we won't get clobbered by King Kong and the producers and stuff. So we'll see what happens.
You'll be the exception to the January rule.
I hope so.
I hope so,
from
too.
From your lips to someone's ears.
To the consumer's
exactly.
ears.
Exactly.
That's kind of what I do for a living.
It's true.
It's
weird.
Always from my lips to their ears.
Yes, that happens on radio.
Thanks for coming in. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Years from now, I want you to remember that guy in St. Louis who talked up my movie so big in 2005. And
I'm never coming back here. You're out of your mind.
The fingers you stepped on your way up the ladder. That's all I'm asking. That's all I'm asking. Richard Shepard, the director of The Matador, here on The Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.